So, als nächsten haben wir jetzt den Dr. Jakob Nordangaard. Er ist Experte für Technologie und sozialen Wandel. Und
Bücher geschrieben.
Bücher geschrieben.
Damit wir nicht so abrupt wechseln, sage ich noch mal kurz, was Corvin uns hier aufgeschrieben hat, Viviane. Also hat Bücher geschrieben wie The Doomsday Clock and the Myth of the Perpetual End of the Earth. Also die Doomsday-Uhr und der Mythos des ewigen Endes der Erde. Rockefeller, A Climate Smart History und der globale Staatsstreich. Und darin beschreibt er den Durchmarsch der angloamerikanischen Finanzmächte durch die Institutionen hin zur neuen Weltordnung mit allen Quellen und Belegen. Also auch hier keine Conspiracy Theory, sondern überprüfbare Fakten. Ja, das werde ich jetzt übersetzen müssen, damit wir nicht zu viele Zuschauer vor den Kopf stoßen. Deswegen also ein bisschen Geduld, das müssen wir so machen wie eben mit Jens Biermann. Dr. Jakob Nordangaard, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
I'm sorry about the delay. It's all our fault. We had some technical difficulties. Are you still okay?
That happens all the time with with Zoom and yeah.
Okay. Can you explain? Can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Well, I have a PhD in, you could say, science and technology studies. Mm-hmm. And I have a master's degree in culture and media production, as well as a master in geography. Mm-hmm. I like to map things. I've been doing that since I was a child. Uh-huh. And I started to draw these maps by myself. And then when I grew up, I started to make maps of, as I have done in my research, uh-huh, between organizations and people and everything, and how everything is kind of connected to each other. Yeah. And in order to study how more powerful organizations can control the ones where there are more or less in the bottom. So
I don't know if you were able to hear what Cristina Martin Jimenez just told us. She explained to us how the Bilderberg Group works. That gave us.
Yeah, that's. I don't understand that much of German or.
Spanish,
but I could catch up with some some of the narrative in it, and Bilderberg Group. I mean, I have of course been they've been around in my research as well,
yeah.
And that's more
but
to find out something about the Bilderberg is kind of it's more hard than the work that I have done.
Yeah, I would say. You're concentrating on the financial institutions and their power, right?
You could say I've studied a lot about the Rockefeller philanthropies. Uh-huh. And also this I wrote a doctoral thesis about European power policy. It was about the energy politics, mm-hmm, European Union. And when I started that, I had this theory about how networks work. So I studied how big foundations like the Rockefellers or the Carnegies or influence policy making, mm-hmm, and how the big money. Goes to into funding like NGOs, and but these NGOs operate to try to convince the politicians to do what the big foundations want them to do.
Okay, let me quickly translate that.
Also, yeah.
Er kennt natürlich auch die Bilderberg-Gruppe. Er hat das nicht so ganz verstanden oder nur wenig von dem verstanden, was da eben auf Deutsch und auf Spanisch besprochen wurde. Er hat sich mehr darauf konzentriert, die Finanz- Mächte, kann man sagen, einzelne Personen wie Rockefeller oder Carnegie oder so, zu untersuchen, deren scheinbar philanthropische Unternehmungen zu beobachten, also die scheinbar menschenfreundlichen. Wir wissen ja inzwischen, dass es alles nur Euphemismen sind für menschenfeindlich, aber diese philanthropischen Unternehmungen zu untersuchen und wie sie die Politik beeinflussen über die Vehikel dieser NGOs. Okay. So what is the net result? Is it correct? A couple of months ago, we interviewed a Holocaust survivor by the name of Vera Sharaf. She was a child when she was when she survived that ordeal. And she explained, and this is an important thing that I have to keep in mind, she explained how they're using euphemisms. The other side is using euphemisms in order to, give us wrong impressions of what's really going on. And that's obviously what you're hinting at when you're talking about philanthropies, because these philanthropies, as we have learned in the meantime, have nothing to do with being kind to mankind.
No.
It's the contrary, right?
Yeah. They are misanthropic.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about control. It's population control. It's control of a planet. It's control of everything. That's the part of the whole Agenda 2030 and the fourth industrial revolution and what the World Economic Forum is up to. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this has been going on for a long, long time. And I have tracked this from where it kind of started. Or it's always hard to have a starting point. But I went back to when these philanthropists got founded. Because I wanted to know the reasons and what they themselves said. So I've followed all the. I mean, it's one thing with this philanthropist now. They are very open with things, and you can download every annual report, every annual review from the Rockefeller Foundation or Rockefeller Brothers Fund, just to follow what they are up to and what they are want to achieve. And this was kind of surprising for me, especially, I started with energy policy in the European Union. One of the important things with energy policy is that it's very connected to climate policy. Mm-hmm. Then I found out when I was doing this mapping and this research and tracking where money came from to these activist groups. Mm-hmm. In my thesis, I discussed biofuels a lot, but also these climate activist groups as well, like Greenpeace and Friends of the Earth. And then I found out that money was funneled from these big foundations. And it was kind of surprising that money came from the Rockefellers, like Rockefeller Brothers Fund and Rockefeller Foundation. And they have a armada of philanthropists. The money from old Standard Oil money went into these environmental organizations that were open, and then they were acting against the big corporations and the evil oil companies like ExxonMobil. That's a Rockefeller company from the beginning. So it was kind of strange. So,
How far back did you go when you just told us you looked at the origins of these philanthropies? Did you start in the early 1900s, 1913 or so? Because that's when it all started all of a sudden. Did you?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I did. And I went back as early as when the Standard Oil Company was founded, and then following the philanthropy that John D. Rockefeller was involved in. Mm-hmm. And then eventually it came to this year, 1913. But it's a very interesting story with the years before. Mm-hmm. I thought it, because we have this, we have the Rockefeller Foundation and we have the Carnegie Corporation as well, and then they and their mission is kind of intertwined. Mm-hmm. And you have this Ford Foundation as well, and we have this.
Have you ever seen those two documentaries by James Corbett? How Big Oil Conquered the World and Why Big Oil Conquered the World?
Yeah, I have. And the thing is, I am. When I watched those documentaries, I had already done that research before, so it was kind of
déjà vu.
It was kind of a proof. Uh-huh. But the things what I have found out was actually okay. It was not just only me that has found out this thing. So
let me quickly translate again. Also er sagt, tatsächlich sind diese philanthropischen Organisationen in Wahrheit misanthropische, also menschenfeindliche, menschenverachtende Organisationen. Ein Beispiel, das er nicht ganz so ausgeführt hat, bringe ich jetzt trotzdem. Diese Öl Unternehmungen. Rockefeller ist ja mit Öl gestartet. Übrigens, wenn Sie sich die, wenn Sie sich diese Documentaries ansehen, dann werden Sie feststellen, dass der erste Rockefeller ein Betrüger war. Der nannte sich Dr. Livingston. Er war weder ein Doktor noch hieß er Livingston und hat dann mit Snake Oil, das sind so Voodoo-Zaubereien, mit denen man glaubt oder behauptet, Menschen gesund machen zu können, gearbeitet, bis ihm dann irgendjemand geholfen hat, das richtige Öl zu verstehen. Da haben sich wohl nicht viel geändert an den Qualifikationen dieser Leute. Jedenfalls sagt er, dass diese Leute auf beiden Seiten unterwegs sind. Wir haben ein Beispiel, das werde ich Ihnen gleich fragen, ob das so korrekt ist. Der Mann heißt Maurice Strong und der hat für die Ölgesellschaften in Kanada gearbeitet, tagsüber sozusagen, und abends hat er angefangen, philanthropische Zwecke zu verfolgen, unter anderem die ganzen Umweltschutzorganisationen zu gründen, und hat damit die Leute, die hinter ihm stehen, auf beiden Seiten platziert. Is Maurice Strong, is that a name that is an example for what you're talking about? Because that's one of the people who worked, so to speak, his daytime job was for the oil industry, and his other job was the creation of many of such environmental protective groups, including, for example, I think that's another Bilderberg construction, the World Wildlife Fund. Is that a good example for what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, you can find these oil people involved in a lot of these organizations. And and of course, Maurice Strong is an important actor, and he was very close to the Rockefeller family.
Why are they doing this? Why are they playing on both sides?
Because if you play both sides, you win.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why. I mean, that's one of the things that I found out, that they always have been doing like this. It's like a method, I can't say that in English. A method, mm-hmm, to do this, mm-hmm, and we actually have books about this: how, mm-hmm, to influence the other side, and how to achieve it, the goal they have in the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's classic dialectics, Hegel, and there's one professor called Peter Vincemius that wrote a book about, and he was involved in the Trilateral Commission, David Rockefeller's Trilateral Commission. Mm-hmm. And then they released a report in 91, I think it was, for this Rio meeting. And in this book, the foreword was written by David Rockefeller and Maurice Strong. Mm-hmm. And in this, Peter Vincemius, a management professor, he had this, he had a theory on how to achieve the goals of these guys, these environmental goals, that of course was another thing. It's more. I mean, it's about environmental control. Mm. So it's very interesting to read this this book, Beyond Interdependence, called, and it came out of the book a couple of years later. I don't remember the name on it now, but
what? How do you? What's his last name? Peter, you said.
Peter Vincemius. He's a Dutch, and he was a Dutch politician as well.
How do you spell that last name?
Vincemius. Vincemius.
Uh-huh. Strange name. So he was a Dutch politician?
Yeah.
And what role does he play in this?
Well, he was, the thing was, he was a part of his team in the Trilateral Commission. Mm-hmm. That were, they were actually writing a kind of a roadmap for the world and how to achieve the Brundtland reports, mm-hmm. Agenda 21. It wasn't called that at that time, but it was based on the Brundtland report. And we found out also the author, the main author of the Brundtland report was Jim McNeill. And he wrote, he was also one of the authors of this book, Beyond Interdependence. And there they had this plan laid out, and we discussed how they should achieve this. And one of the things was establish a kind of Earth Council or a world government in the end.
When was this?
It was in 1991, this report came out.
What was that report called again?
Beyond Interdependence.
Beyond Interdependence. So that is already pointing in the direction of global control, world government.
Yeah, it is. And how to achieve this through funneling money to certain organizations and also construct new organizations to get what you want and put your people in these organizations. But that's the plan. And also to influence all these NGOs.
Okay. Who's behind this? Who's behind this guy? Peter, whatever his name is.
Peter Vincemius. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I mean, he was one of the authors of his report, Beyond mm-hmm. Interdependence, but it was written for the Trilateral Commission. Mm-hmm. David Rockefeller's organization, Trilateral Commission.
Yeah, but that's a private invention. Did anybody ever take notice of this?
Well, they did. Uh-huh. I mean, it's if you read this today, you can see that these things, a lot of it happened, uh-huh. and how they calculated on how to achieve this in the end.
Okay.
I mean, and that's the thing with these books and reports and everything. Now you can follow what has happened. Mm-hmm. And when I followed, the Rockefeller philanthropists afterwards, you could see how they acted from the advice of this book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So this is where they laid down sort of like their game plan in this book?
They have done it. We have a couple of reports. The whole thing started a lot earlier, of course. Mm. One important thing is this book.
Prospect for America.
Mm-hmm. Prospect for America, the Rockefeller panel reports. Mm. Mm-hmm. This is the start of it. Whether the Rockefeller Foundation or it's the Rockefeller brothers but decided how could they be a part of this to change society, to change the world to a global commons, a global interdependent system. So, and in this, they talked about, of course, population, environment, and health. So one thing, and it comes all the time, this thing with control of the resources. That's, I mean, it was very important for a family, what's in the oil business, of course. Okay, and also...
Let me translate, yeah. Jacob. Also, es geht einfach immer um dieselbe Geschichte, nämlich darum, dass Leute wie Rockefeller und andere Superreiche ihr Geld benutzen, um sie über NGOs oder über scheinbar philanthropische Einrichtungen, um mit diesem Geld die Welt zu kontrollieren. Also man könnte das als einen einzigen großen James-Bond-Film bezeichnen. Hoffentlich kommt der endlich mal raus, um uns ein bisschen aufzulockern. Also es ist immer dasselbe Spiel. Er hat von einem Politiker, dessen Namen ich mir einfach nicht richtig aufschreiben kann, ein ehemaliger belgischer oder holländischer Politiker namens Peter Wimsemius gesprochen, der ein Buch geschrieben hat, in dem die so eine Art Spielplan für die Übernahme der Weltkontrolle zumindest angedeutet, aber vielleicht auch im Detail beschrieben wird. Ich kann es nicht genau sagen, weil ich es nicht richtig verstanden habe. Der Plan oder das Buch heißt, glaube ich, Beyond Interdependence. Das heißt so viel wie jenseits der gegenseitigen Abhängigkeiten und führt natürlich direkt hin, wenn man keine gegenseitigen Abhängigkeiten hat, wenn wir keine regionalen Strukturen aufbauen, zur Weltregierung, über die hier die ganze Zeit geredet wird. Bitte?
Kürzeren Intervallen übersetzt.
Ja, genau. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, about the prospect for America I was talking about, yes. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in this, they decided that, and we discussed, Henry Kissinger was one of the...
One of the
this project. Yeah. They hired Henry Kissinger to do this. He was a young academician at that time. So that's when Henry Kissinger came in to be a loyal worker for the Rockefeller fortune.
Yeah.
And they say two interesting, very interesting things in this book that Min has. It shows that they have been thinking about these issues for a long time. One thing was climate change. Because they argue that because of climate change, I mean, it's something that affects the whole world. It's a worldwide system, the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So goes over borders. And that's why we wanted to... they thought it was fruitful, because they had this idea of global interdependence and creating this new management system.
When was this published, Jacob?
It was published in 1961, I think. This 61. Book, but it is written. It was released in a couple of reports in the late 50s. Mm-hmm. So I think it was commissioned by Nelson Rockefeller. That became vice president from the United States later, the rest of the Rockefeller brothers. And
what's the other one? You said there's two things in there: climate change and the
climate
other
climate change and global health.
Aha.
Yeah, that's the important thing, because that was one thing. That was another other big thing that could. I mean, and we discussed. I mean, epidemics and pandemics. They go over borders, so it's a global problem, and global problems needs global solutions. And that's the old mantra. It's always been this. And I explain this a lot in my book as well.
Okay.
My latest book.
I'll quickly translate that part too. Also dann gibt es ein weiteres Buch, was wohl von großer Bedeutung ist, publiziert in 1961, Prospect for America oder Aussichten für Amerika. unter anderem von Henry Kissinger mitgeschrieben worden. He was one of the co-authors, right? Or is he the only author?
No, he's a co-author. I mean, he more or less had this responsibility for the project.
Okay, I got
it. So it's a lot of people involved in this. Nelson Rockefeller, a lot of people say he didn't have much brain of his own, so he had to hire these clever people. So,
yeah, it's always the same story. These people are not the brightest candles on the chandelier. Also, in 1961 ist dieses Buch herausgegeben worden, offenbar im Auftrag von Nelson Rockefeller, der nicht die hellste Kerze auf der Torte gewesen sein soll, wie keiner von denen, über die wir heute gesprochen haben. Die brauchen dann immer jemanden, der sozusagen sein Gehirn zur Verfügung stellt. Und das war in diesem Fall Henry Kissinger, der zwar nur ein Co-Autor war, aber offenbar der entscheidende Co-Autor. Und in diesem Buch geht es um zwei Dinge insbesondere, nämlich einmal um Climate Change, wohlgemerkt 1961, und einmal um Global Health. Und das sind die beiden Dinge, wo das ist das Thema des Buches, wo man sagen muss, das sind globale Probleme, wir brauchen eine globale Lösung, wir brauchen eine Weltregierung. Immer das gleiche simple Spiel von ein paar Größenwahnsinnigen. So it's always the same game plan that's being played out here. We have a bunch of megalomaniacs, in this case Nelson Rockefeller, who have these fantasies about a new world order and a world government, and they're using, as you pointed out in this particular book, two crowbars to go after these goals. One is global health, which of course needs global solutions, and in the end a world government, and the other one is climate change, and that's what's probably coming up next, right?
I mean, it's that's the most important now, but they also discussed other global problems. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, at that time it was we had the Cold War.
Yeah.
So it was about the fear of a nuclear war.
Yeah.
One interesting thing is that they advised the American government to give more money to develop more nuclear weapons. And we had this maniac, Edward Teller was involved in this, the inventor of the hydrogen bomb. And just to create this fear, and then it's always the same story.
When you were talking about the Cold War, because that's precisely the situation that we were in back then in 1961. Yeah. I mean, this is a couple of years before the Berlin Wall was put up, in the middle of a Cold War. Was that another staged kind of thing? That Cold War, because that requires a global solution as well? Or is that something that had gotten out of hand because there's too many people working against each other?
Yeah, but if you go back to the visions that, I mean, like the Rockefellers and the Carnegies and this ultra-rich people had, is that they wanted to fuse these systems eventually.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing is, I think that the thinking of these people is always that you have this kind of threat, and that gives, I mean, in the Cold War, it was an expansion of weaponry. You had to invest a lot of in weapons, and it made the things develop very fast.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the technology, because of this fear, technology was developed very fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the end, I mean, this terror, this threat from the atomic bomb, it ended in with the fall of the Berlin Wall, of mm-hmm. course. And at that time, they had already a new threat that was coming in, and that was climate change.
Mm-hmm. Ja, also damals war der kalte Welt der Hintergrund, vor dem das Buch Prospect for America erschienen ist. In diesem Kalten Krieg, wenn ich das richtig verstanden habe, wollten aber eigentlich die Leute, die immer auf beiden Seiten spielen, damit man eben auf jeden Fall gewinnt, wohl die beiden Supermächte oder die Ost und West irgendwie miteinander vereinen. Die Gefahr des Kalten Krieges, die damals drohte, führte dazu, dass eine Menge Technik entwickelt wurde, wo, das werde ich jetzt aber lieber nochmal nachfragen, an der dann natürlich auch wieder die Leute, die das Ganze mit begleitet haben, sagen wir mal jetzt, verdient haben. So, is it correct to say that because of the danger of the Cold War, that the military-industrial complex was capable and able to develop all these new techniques, come up with all kinds of new weapon systems, etc., and that the people who are behind this were once again making a lot of money through this?
Yes. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's how they do it. I mean, they invest in the technology. Yeah. They always come up with solutions. And then that has been a thing with Rockefeller Philanthropy as well, with other areas like, I mean, agriculture.
Yeah.
Where you talk a lot about we have too many people on the earth and we have to do something. And in that case, the Green Revolution came. Mm-hmm. And the Green Revolution mechanized the agriculture, and you got diesel tractors and everything that benefited, of course, the Rockefeller companies.
Is it fair to say that what they do is they constantly create problems in order to then give us the solution to these problems? I'm thinking about Monsanto. That company destroys the crops of people and then forces the people whose crops have been destroyed to buy their own products, Monsanto's product. Is that correct to say?
It's business.
Yeah, it's business.
Yeah, okay. It's business. It's just how it works. Mm-hmm. And you have to have a very good problem. It's like Winston Churchill, you should never let a crisis go to waste.
Go to waste.
Yeah, it's... they love crisis, and they talk a lot about crisis and opportunity.
Also er sagt, diese Gruppe von Superreichen findet Krisen klasse. Er zitiert gerade Winston Churchill, der gesagt hat, man sollte niemals eine Krise ungenutzt vorbeiziehen lassen, weil damit verdienen sie natürlich viel Geld. Aber er hat auch eben mit Ja geantwortet, als ich gefragt habe, ist das so, dass die selbst die Krisen kreieren, um dann die Lösung zu liefern und damit Geld zu verdienen? Beispiel war, sagt er, ja, stimmt. Beispiel ist, was ich gefragt habe, ist Monsanto. Monsanto ist inzwischen ja von Bayer gekauft worden, schwer in der Kritik wegen diverser Produkte, die sie hergestellt haben, die krebserzeugend sein sollen. Monsanto kauft weltweit oder sorgt weltweit dafür, dass sie Patente auf, du weißt das ein bisschen besser als ich, Viviane, aber Patente auf irgendwelche Saatzuchten kriegen, Saaten kriegen.
Und vor allem ist das Besondere daran, dass die sich halt nicht wieder replizieren. Das sind sozusagen Terminators, also Terminator-Seeds, also Saatgut, was sich nicht wieder vermehrt. Normalerweise haben die Bauern ja dann einen Teil der Ernte zurückbehalten, das wieder ausgesät, sodass man quasi ein unabhängiges System hatte. Und das also speziell in dem Baumwollbereich ist das in Indien auch ganz übel den Bauern aufgestoßen, die dann vielleicht eine Saison eine ganz tolle, üppigere Ernte hatten. Und dann in der zweiten Saison ist es natürlich so, da kommt aus dieser, wenn man die klassische Herangehensweise hat, das wieder aussieht, dann kommt eben nichts raus oder ganz wenig raus. Das heißt, man ist ständig am Haken und muss immer wieder nachkaufen. Das ist dann auch der Trick, weshalb es plötzlich der Saatguthandel dann zu einem massiven Businessmodell wird.
Also die steigen ein, sorgen dafür, dass die Bauern nicht mehr selbstständig leben können und sagen dann, und jetzt musst du unser Zeug kaufen. So einfach ist das auf einen Nenner gebracht. Viviane knows a lot more about Monsanto and how they destroy the crops of the people in order to force them to buy Monsanto's products. By the way, this, we were just told a couple of weeks ago by someone from India, this has caused an uprising of the Indian people. I don't know if you've heard about this. Outside of Delhi, hundreds of thousands of people have gathered and are still gathering and protesting this. So things are happening right now.
Yeah.
A lot of things are happening right now. It's all coming out into the open, Jacob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then, I mean, they are very open what we want to do as well. I mean,
yeah, why do they do that, Jacob?
Well, Economic Forum, Fourth Industrial Revolution thing. I mean, everything is open. It's just to read it. It's not conspiracy.
Why do they do that? Why do they put this all out into the open? Do they think people are too stupid to understand? Why do they do this? Because quite obviously, if we know what's going on, and if we understand what's going on, some of us are going to fight this, right?
Yes.
Why do they do this?
I mean, we can have... one thing can be that they are confident. They think they have achieved so much. They have come so far. And I mean, that's what we have discussed before. This is going to go so fast that people won't be able to catch up with it. And we are prepared for this so long. So we just have to push the button and just get along with it. And people will not be able to react in time. I think that can be a part of it. Uh-huh. But another part can be like they more or less are in a panic mode, like these strategies doesn't work anymore. I mean, it's they have used this for a very long time, and more and more people are catching up and understand how this works and how big business works as well.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Let me quickly translate that. Also, die Frage ist, warum sagt ja. Ja, genau. Das ist, ja, Wolfgang, gleich. Er sagt, das ist ja alles draußen. Man kann das alles nachlesen, was die vorhaben. Also im Grunde kann der komplette Wahnsinn, Größenwahnsinn, muss man sagen, wahrscheinlich ist es aber ein pathologisches Zeichen, da müssten wir mal die Psychologen nachfragen. Im Grunde kann sich jeder davon überzeugen, dass das genau das ist, was Jacob gerade erzählt, was diese Truppe vorhat, nämlich die Weltherrschaft zu erlangen, indem sie unsere Vermögenswerte stiehlt und die Menschen reduziert, sodass man dann mit dem Rest der Truppe machen kann, was man will. Warum ist das alles draußen, habe ich gefragt. Und er sagt, ja, entweder die sind super zuversichtlich und sind sich einfach total sicher, dass es klappen wird, weil man ja so lange Vorkehrungen getroffen hat und es wird jetzt so schnell passieren, dass wir uns nicht wehren können. Das scheint ja nicht so wirklich zu funktionieren. Oder aber, und das scheint mir eine nicht ganz fernliegende Erklärung zu sein, die andere Seite ist in Panik, weil sie merkt, dass wir merken, was los ist. Zumindest die 20% von uns, oder vielleicht sind es ja auch mehr inzwischen, die sich genauer angucken, was hier eigentlich los ist und die Gelegenheit nutzen, um das, was erkennbar ist, auch wirklich erkennbar zu machen. Okay, I got that, Jacob.
Maybe can I make a little remark? Maybe it's more like as part of the game, I don't know, that you just communicate it to the exterior and also to maybe attract other players who would like to be involved, or maybe it's a question of karma. You put it out in the open, and if we don't do anything, then that's our fault.
It's up to us. We tell you what we are doing, and if you don't get it, yeah.
So there is a spiritual side to this, right?
Because
interesting.
Very much.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Kurz nochmal und dann Wolfgang.
Ja, also er sagt, es kann auch sein, weil Viviane eben nachgefragt hat, dass das irgendwas mit Karma zu tun hat, dass sie sich sagen, wenn wir euch sagen, was wir mit euch vorhaben, dass wir euch vernichten wollen, dass wir euch bestehlen wollen und ihr macht trotzdem mit, dann habt ihr ja selbst Schuld. Sagt er, ja, das kann sein. Also so eine Art spirituelle Seite ist auch dabei, heißt aber noch mehr für uns, wir machen eben nicht mit. So that's another explicit warning to us to not play along, because if we don't play along, they will not succeed. But Dr. Vodak wanted to ask a question. Wolfgang.
I say hello. Yes, it's a very interesting discussion, and I think it is possible that they have calculated all what we discuss about. I think they have very good sociologists, they have psychologists, they know everything. If they want, they get to know everything. They know all the tricks psychology ever has discovered, and they always try to find out to earn money with all those tricks and to be stronger than the others. So I think what we do is that we are still speaking of them. We still speak of those people. We are fixed on them. Who is it? What do they do with us? We don't turn away from them. We don't say we don't need them. They are not important. It's the same situations young people have when they still are fixed with their children in puberty, you know? When they were used to listen to the parents what to do and what is right and what is not right. And suddenly they grow up. And suddenly they look around what other possibilities. Oh, here am I. I could be a parent too. I could be myself too. So this is a period of changing the attention to the world. And I think democracy is just in pubertate. It's just in this phases of pubertate. We who know how to organize, who should know, and who have exercised several times, we always turn around and look for parents. We always look up. All the politicians, they say, no, it's not us. We have the power, but there must be someone who is much, much more clever than we are. And so there is this mechanism, and we follow it. So I think we have to learn a lot about democracy, and we have to try out a lot about democracy.
Übersetz doch bitte mal, Wolfgang, was du gerade gesagt hast.
Verzeihung. Ja, ich denke, wir sind in einer Art Pubertät der Demokratie. Wir haben die Demokratie ja noch nicht lange entdeckt. Das ist ja erst seit der Französischen Revolution und seit 1848 in Deutschland haben wir erst angefangen, so Übungen zu machen. Und dann ist es immer schief gegangen. Und dann haben wir tatsächlich mal eine Weimarer Republik in Deutschland gehabt. Und da ist es wieder schief gegangen. Da haben wir wieder nach Papi geguckt, der uns alles sagt, was wir tun sollen. Wir haben die Demokratie immer wieder aufgegeben. Und ich glaube, dass die schaffen es immer noch, diese Papis, diese Leute, die da mit viel Geld und viel Macht sind, uns weiszumachen, dass wir doch schwach sind und dass wir doch Opfer sind. Und dafür nutzen sie immer wieder irgendwelche Feinde. Und dadurch machen sie uns auch immer wieder abhängig. Sie machen das mit Hilfe der Medien, weil die Medien das einzige Mittel sind, mit der wir unsere Meinung außerhalb unseres näheren Umkreises bilden können. Davon sind wir abhängig. Das wissen sie. Und deshalb, die Medien sind ja offenbar billig zu kriegen. Die kosten ja offenbar gar nicht viel. Das müssen wir natürlich verhindern, wenn wir diese Pubertät endlich mal hinter uns bringen wollen als Demokraten. Das heißt, wir müssen die Medien tatsächlich besser für uns kontrollieren, dass sie nicht fremden Interessen folgen. Und das sind Sachen, die erleben wir jetzt traurig. Das sind ja übrigens die gleichen Leute, die auch im Drogenhandel sehr, sehr erfolgreich sind. Die wissen, wie man Menschen abhängig macht, wie man Menschen hypnotisieren kann auf bestimmte Probleme. Denk nur an diese Towers, an die 9-11-Geschichte, wie plötzlich alle Leute nur nach Terroristen gesucht haben, jahrzehntelang. Und das ist ja plötzlich nicht mehr das Thema. Aber die können immer wieder neue Themen erfinden. Und als sie die Terroristen erfunden hatten, da boomte plötzlich die Industrie der privaten Sicherheitsfirmen ganz gewaltig. Und so boomt jetzt die Impfindustrie. Und so boomt dann das Nächste, was man tun kann, gegen das, womit sie uns Angst machen. Dieses Angstmachen, dieses Abhängigmachen, das ist der Trick, mit dem sie uns dumm und als ihre Kinder behandeln. Und ich denke, es wird Zeit, dass wir da als Demokraten mal diese Pubertätsphase überwinden und selbstbewusst uns selbst organisieren und sagen, komm, piss off, liebe Leute, euch brauchen wir nicht.
So that's Wolfgang Wodak's advice. We have to grow up. We have to get out of puberty by taking responsibility for ourselves instead of looking for daddy to help us out of this. Take responsible for ourselves. Again, this is my idea, and I think it's also Wolfgang's idea. We have to disconnect from these supranational organizations, these corporations, these charities, and do our own thing in our own regions, in our own communities. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, totally. By Wolfgang.
They will try to put one against the other. They will try to divide us. This is the best trick, divide et impera. And this is what they always try. And so we should not be afraid of this. Now we have globalization, we have internet. We can connect with anyone in the world. We can see they work the same way as we do. We can just communicate. If there is a problem, we can solve it. We have all the means to communicate and to find out what the truth is and to offer someone and to get someone from someone else. So we could have networks of people which are equal. which are different but equal. And I think we can very well organize it. So there needn't be a government of the world. This is impossible because the government would be blind for the world. The world is too big, too complicated. No government would understand the world. So it's a stupid idea to have a government of the world. We have regions, and the regions live peacefully together. They communicate. We have human rights. We already agreed on them. They are a great thing. So everything is there. We could just start and forget those people.
Also, übersetzt das auch nochmal. Also ich übersetze es. Wir sind jetzt in der Lage, jetzt schon in der Lage, ohne diese supranationalen Organisationen zu leben. Eine supranationale Organisation, die von oben herunter dirigiert, ist ja im Übrigen auch gar keine Demokratie. Und Wolfgang hat eben gesagt, sie können ja gar nicht erkennen, was für wen genau richtig ist, weil wer von ganz oben runter guckt, sieht nicht, was da unten im Detail los ist. Also zurück in die Region. Wir müssen unser eigenes Ding machen, weil in der Region, in der Community, in der Gemeinde, da wissen wir genau, was für uns richtig und falsch ist. Dann brauchen wir auch keine supranationalen Regelungen. Jacob, is there something, because we're way behind, is there something of extreme importance that we haven't, that you wanted to tell us?
Well, the thing is, I mean, they plan everything in advance, and I just want to mention this. I mean, they, every time, if they do something, there will be an opposition. And that's very important to, I mean, now we know that they are up to trying to influence and infiltrate and everything to get the opposition to the position that they want. And I followed something called the Great Transition. It was... at the same time as this Beyond Interdependence report I told you about, there was an initiative called the Polestar Project that started and they wanted to make scenarios for the future and ways to get to their preferred utopia. Of course, world government and everything, and this supranational organizations that manages the planet, and then they wrote a couple of scenarios. They started work in 1991, and they came up with a report in 2002 called "The Great Transition: The Promises and Lures of Our Time." And responsible for this was Stockholm Environment Institute and something called the TELUS Institute in the United States. Mm-hmm. And it was based on Earth Charter and how to achieve a planetary society. And in this scenario, because I went back to it some months ago when everything happened, the thing is, one of the financiers was Stephen Rockefeller. That's Nelson Rockefeller's son. He was involved in this project. So their thinking was, they had these scenarios, and they had a preferred scenario that's called the Great Transitions, and that's their sustainable utopia.
Yeah, but is it? I mean, these efforts have been going on for such a long time, over and over and over again. But this is the first time that everything is out in the open. We can all of a sudden, because of this crisis, this staged crisis, we can see everything. So would you agree? Would you agree that this is the time to actually do something about it? This is the first time that we have a real chance to do something about it.
Because and the thing is, they have. I think they don't. They want us to think that they are totally in control.
But they are not.
No, and I mean, one of the things with the internet was, I mean, from a military perspective, it was a way to. They wanted to get into everybody's home and to watch us and to control us. But at the same time, they gave us tools to actually starting to talk to each other over the borders and everything to understand how these people operate. So they gave us the cure, one can say.
That makes sense.
What I wanted to say was these scenarios, they mentioned that they needed a mega crisis in order to achieve this global society. Mm. And they discussed, it's as early as 97, that they said a pandemic, a global pandemic was something that could be this mega crisis in order to create this. And they said that during a transition period, it could be that a fortress world came into being. But they also discussed how to influence this kind of freedom movement in order to get them to say the things that were beneficial for the world controllers.
So would you, what about, what's her name, Greta Thunberg? Is she a creation of these people or is she just being manipulated?
Well, she's manipulated, that of course, but we have, it's the people around Greta. I mean, you have the Club of Rome people. Yeah. That's very important. And I have this in my latest book. I write about this, how they kind of invented Greta, because this was it was the United Nations program we had in Germany.
Yeah.
We have this youth festival. And they came up with the idea at that festival in, I think it was in 2015, but they would start with school strikes in order to, then they, after a couple of years, they found the perfect girl to do this.
Okay, that's good to know. Let me translate again. Also sagt, wir haben jetzt die Gelegenheit, was zu tun, weil, was die andere Seite nicht so richtig mitgekriegt hat, weil, wie gesagt, nicht alle Kerzen auf der Torte so richtig glühen. Sie haben uns mit diesen Kontrollmechanismen, mit den technischen Kontrollmechanismen, mit denen sie versuchen, uns unter Kontrolle zu halten, also zum Beispiel Amazon, wie heißt das Ding da? Man kann ja mit den Dingern sprechen und dann irgendwas bestellen oder sagen, ich möchte dies und jenes Musikstück hören. Gleichzeitig haben sie uns, damit kontrollieren sie uns, überwachen uns, aber gleichzeitig haben sie uns die Kommunikationsmöglichkeiten gegeben, damit wir jederzeit auf der Welt mit jedem reden können. Es war zwar nicht so wirklich die Absicht, aber das hat jetzt, oder das, was daraus geworden ist, beispielsweise die Kommunikation, die wir dauernd rund um die Uhr mit den Kollegen weltweit haben, das war ganz bestimmt nicht deren Absicht. Aber er sagt, das ist die Gelegenheit, um was dagegen zu tun. Sie brauchten diese Megakrise, das wird schon seit vielen Jahren offenbar geplant, in diesem Fall also die Pandemie, um ihre Allmachtsfantasien umzusetzen. Ich habe dann nochmal gefragt, was ist denn eigentlich mit Greta Thunberg? Das ist ja auch, wenn man dieses zweite Tool, diese zweite Brechstange sieht, Global Health und Global Climate, das ist ja auch möglicherweise ein Instrument, was kreiert worden ist. Er sagt also, ganz bestimmt wird sie manipuliert und wahrscheinlich ist sie tatsächlich eine Kreation der United Nations. Die haben sich nämlich, wie er eben gesagt hat, überlegt, wie man mit Schulstreiks möglicherweise dafür sorgen kann, dass die Aufmerksamkeit der Weltbevölkerung auf dieses Global Warming Problem, was existiert, aber nicht in dem Ausmaß, in dem es hier behauptet wird, lenken kann. Und dann kam Greta Thunberg des Wegs und schon hatten sie das perfekte Posterchild für ihre Geschichte.
And do you think that this pandemic that we're looking at now, is this like, do you think they just hopped on it or is this, was this like, is this the big crisis that they'd had hoped for? Like, and really just, it came along, or is this whole, like, I mean, that they maybe just found something that looked like an opportunity and then, boom.
It was the perfect opportunity. I mean, and they planned for a pandemic for a long time. And I mean, they had this in the scenario reports from this Great Transition Initiative. And I mean, we know the Rockefeller Foundation and their report about how to implement this new technology if a new pandemic comes and everything. And then the World Economic Forum working groups that were planning for a pandemic for, I mean, like 15 years before it actually happened. So
when did they come? When did they come up with the Great Transition? What year was that?
The report, the Great Transition, came in 2002.
Aha. So yeah, they just changed the name. Now it's the Great Reset, right?
Yeah. But the Great Reset is more a part of the Great Transition or the Great Transformation. I mean, because the transition is a transition part. I mean, you should come to this end goal. Mm-hmm. The omega point, one can say, where they have achieved everything. But I mean, this great reset. It's a kind of a start to actually do something and then steer the world very fast in the direction that they want.
Well, okay, Jacob. I think we got the idea. I think we need a lot of psychologists because there are a lot of people out there who definitely need treatment. Many of them are probably beyond help. I think we're going to talk to, seriously, we're going to have to talk to more psychologists because this is insane. This is totally insane.
Can I ask one last question? Do you think it's going according to the plans from what you've seen in, you know, what the plans that are laid out in the... Do you know these books that you looked at, or the declaration statements, plans?
Well, if you look on this, especially these great transitions, they had a couple of scenarios, and it was like their preferred thing was to the world to show the direction that they wanted, not in this to have this mega crisis to do it. So this it feels like it's Plan B.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes.
Yeah.
It makes a lot of sense. I don't know. Have you ever been in touch with Ole Damegaard? I spoke with him yesterday.
I have spoken to him one time.
He too, but for different reasons, says that this is their Plan B. Plan A has failed, and that's why their Plan B is maybe coming along a bit rocky because some things have gotten out of hand.
Can go out of order. And they have planned for this as well. That's because they have this fortress world scenario that the elites will get into their gated communities and have guards and everything, and the rest of the world will kind of just the system collapses and everything. So they have discussed that as well.
Also er sagt, das könnte auf Vivianes Frage, ob alles entsprechend deren Plänen läuft, sagt er nicht so wirklich. Eigentlich ist das wahrscheinlich eher der Plan B. Ich habe ihn an einen schwedischen Journalisten erinnert oder ihn danach gefragt, mit dem ich gestern gesprochen habe. Er sagte auch, das ist der Plan B und der Plan B scheint nicht richtig zu funktionieren. Er hat hinzugefügt, dass die... dass die andere Seite natürlich auch so eine Bunkermentalität hat, weil sie glauben, dass die Massen, wenn die merken, was los ist, ihnen aufs Fell rücken. Eine Befürchtung, die nicht ganz unbegründet sein dürfte. Okay, well, Jacob, thank you very much. This was enlightening.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me.
Okay, yeah. thank you very much.
We will succeed.
Yes, we will succeed.
Yeah.
With the help of you and others as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you.